plate a potential nugget.
And you also talk about the myth of the false binary, right? Sometimes, you know, as leaders, people are presented options as A or B, but maybe there is a C out there, or D or E or F. So can you talk a little bit about how we ensure we don't get trapped in sort of a false binary kind of a context?
The first step is really to recognize it. And so this part of this work is built on another reframing thinker, Roger Martin, who's written extensively about this. I really like the historical anecdote of Henry Kissinger, the U.S. statesman, who's joking and he's saying, well, how do you handle a president? And kind of, you know, how do you work as a civil servant with them? And he says, well, if you want a president to continue working with your current policy, then you say, Mr. President, we have three options: surrender, the current policy, or nuclear war. Like, you know, it really beautifully encapsulates how the person defining the options, they have a lot of power that they may use for good or not for good necessarily. So I think it is really about recognizing whenever you're faced with, hey, here are your two options, your immediate question should be, well, is there maybe a third option? Or maybe even the option of not choosing anything right now, but delaying the decision for that matter. Like, we know from a lot of studies of decision making that the second you go in and create more options for yourself, your tendency to make a good choice, it improves dramatically. So be wary of those kind of, here's A or B options that life sometimes presents us with.
There's a funny anecdote here. As a parent, I have a 12-year-old and an 8-year-old. With the younger one, we actually tried this, right? In the spirit of getting him to eat healthy stuff, we'd present two healthy options as a choice. You know, do you want carrots or broccoli? And he sort of fell for it a couple of times. The third time he said, I think there's chocolates in the fridge.
That's on you. That's on you for having smart kids. It's a lot easier if the kids are stupid.
It's a double-edged sword, but you're right. I think much to be grateful for. I think maybe a more real-life situation. Actually, this happened to me when I went for a coffee shop. Let's say this is a Starbucks equivalent, an Indian equivalent of Starbucks. I remember walking up to the counter looking to order a coffee, and the guy said, what do you want, medium or large? And I sort of paused there and said, do you have a small? He said, yes, we do. And then he sort of gave me a small. But sometimes people, especially in retail, present options. And they know that you're rushed and they want you to pick quickly, and they give you a sort of an adverse selection of the menu. So
totally. And a beautiful example, even like you can do this with very small things as well. I wouldn't be surprised if that wasn't accidental. From that coffee chain, they probably at some point discovered, hey, this actually increases our sales if we ask. And you know, it's benign. Clients or customers still have the option of choosing the small one if they want. We're just nudging them.
Nudging, exactly. Yeah. I think I was reading the book Nudge by Richard Thaler, and he talks about the way you present options and how, you know, that leads to how people pick, whether it's pensions or whether it's Netflix subscription. So
exactly. It's a very good point, I think. I would add to that, you can even sometimes do this with choices that seem binary. Like an example is, let's say you don't have kids and you are trying to decide, should I have kids or not? That is pretty binary by nature. But even then, you can go in and change the question to say, under what conditions would I want to have kids? Then you start to think differently about it versus as a kind of a yes or no choice, if you will.
This is a really powerful idea. And I find that several leaders fall into this trap given how busy they are. This is a classic case of being so busy with your current life that you don't have the mind space or the bandwidth to ask the question, what else is out there? A cup of coffee is not a big deal, but I've seen it in the way senior leaders approach their careers. As a former search consultant at Egon Zehnder, when I would reach out to busy, successful leaders with a potential opportunity, the discussion would very often center around a binary choice. Take this new role or stay on in the current job. But very often there's a third or a fourth pathway which might not be in the menu card, and which might have to be cooked for a period of time with a certain element of deliberate effort and mind space, which might be the right answer for you. I came across this interesting term weigh power in the context of resilience. Rather than obsessing over willpower, which is really about withstanding shocks, weigh power speaks about the power of generating new ideas and pathways that might get you to a better place. I love the phrase that Bruce Feiler uses in this context. He's the author of the book Life is in the Transitions. He studied several journeys and how they've gone through life quakes. And he says that very often we shape-shift through situations, like a butterfly coming out of a caterpillar, rather than grinding our way through.
Well, let me first of all just say that there has not been a more fetishized word in business and in life in the last decade than resilience. And the problem with resilience is that resilience is one of those words and ideas that grew up back in the linear age, back when our lives were shaped by the factory and by industrial manufacturing. The resilience actually is a term of physics that began with the spring. And so the idea was that you would pull the spring, and how resilient, quote unquote, the spring was how far the spring would spring back into its original position. So that implies that you go back after going through a life transition. And some people go back, but frankly, many more people go sideways or forward or to a different direction altogether. So resilience is not the model. And the pandemic is a perfect example of this. If you think when it first happened, we all thought, oh, we're going to wait 6 weeks and we're going to go back to normal. Well, we're looking at a year plus at this point. And what we've now learned is we're not going back. We're going to a different place. And in fact, that's why when we get in, you know, as we go forward in this conversation and start talking about the various kind of stages and phases of a life transition, that the first one is to say goodbye to the world that is not coming back, the world without the loved one or without the job or without the title or without the legs or whatever has been lost in the original life quake. So instead, what happens is that we rethink what's important to us. And so kind of the quick and dirty on the idea of the shape, back to the original shape conversation we were having, is that there are kind of three pillars we have to how we make meaning in our lives. I call them the ABCs of meaning. And the A is agency, what we do or make or create. The B is belonging, our relationships, our colleagues, our friends, our loved ones, our co-religionists, the people we volunteer with. And then the C is a cause, a calling, a purpose, sort of something higher than ourselves. So we all have a way that we kind of balance these. I'm an ABC. I'm a writer, so I'm very agentic. I'm very involved with family and a very active dad. And cause is kind of less important to me. My wife, Linda Rotenberg, who started and runs an organization called Endeavor that supports high-impact entrepreneurs in 50 countries around the world, she's very cause-oriented. She gives back to entrepreneurs all over the planet. Then she's very agentic because she's, you know, a founder and a builder and a social entrepreneur. Relationships, yeah, she tolerates the rest of us. So she's like a CAB. So what tends to happen when we go through a life quake is that we rebalance. Like maybe we've been working very hard and we want to spend more time with our family, or maybe we've been a caretaker or caring for an aging relative or a child, and maybe we're now moving on from that and we want to give back. Or maybe we've been giving back in our career and we want to do something more for ourselves. So what tends to happen in these life quakes is, because they are sort of breaks in the normal, they are opportunities, and in some ways I would even say obligations, to rethink what's most important to us, and allows us to kind of breathe, take stock, and maybe then shift our priorities somewhat.
Back to what Thomas says, pausing and asking ourselves if there are options in the menu card beyond what you see might get you to a better place. There is a bias here that psychologists call what you see is all there is bias. If you want to know more about this bias and how it plays out in our journeys, there was a long article I wrote about this on LinkedIn. You can just go to my LinkedIn page and find this in the article section. Thank you for listening.